Welcome to the Space Cave. I'm David Huntsberger, a big warg to all of you. I heard warg in person for the first time recently from Ryan. Hello, Ryan. Came to the Junk Show, the two-year anniversary, or really the 25-month anniversary extravaganza, which was fantastic. So thanks to everyone who came. It was a full house, back to capacity. The last couple shows before that, the turnouts weren't so great, and I was wondering what was going on, but a lot of people came out for the anniversary show, and a lot of traffic here today in the Space Cave. Just picture yourself sitting quietly in a median somewhere at a busy intersection, and yet you don't feel anything going on. They don't exist. They're not real cars. They're just figments of our imagination. Ooh, they're so loud. Anyway, the Junk Show was great. Derek Hughes blew everyone's mind, as usual. The whole lineup was great, but in particular, Derek's always... Man, he's a wizard. I don't know if you've ever seen him, but if he comes to your town to do magic, I highly recommend it. Thanks to Alfonso Callejas for the... I hope I'm saying that right. For the donation, for the beer today. So, thank you, Alfonso. Appreciate it. If you'd like to donate, buy the show a beer, you can do that at thespacecave.com. And a point of correction, or not correction, but just notes from the last episode. And I meant to say this at the end, but I was a little sick, so I kind of rushed through the in-between spots in last week's episodes, and I've forgotten episode, not episodes. Come on, get it together. I forgot to mention that at the end of last week's episode, I was struggling for someone's name that came to me right after we finished recording, and I even made a note, like, oh, I mentioned that afterward, and then because I was sick, I didn't get around to doing it. I kind of just hustled through the in-between parts. Anyway, Sheila Madrak was the person I was thinking of when I said charismatic megafauna, and I apologize that I couldn't recall her name right off the top of my head. She's the best. Hope to have her back on the show eventually. She has since gotten married since she was on the show, and officially has her PhD. So I am a big fan of Sheila, and apologies for forgetting her name. All right, let's check in with a citizen from planet Earth.
Hello?
Chris Mancini.
Hey,
man.
Parker, how are you?
Good. Feels like we've already rehearsed this because of my stupid app.
Absolutely. No, second time's the charm.
Yeah, we had a really nice conversation the first time, and partly it's nice to know that it disappeared in the ether. It didn't get recorded. It must not have wanted to be captured.
Well, we needed a practice run.
Yeah, needed that warm-up run through.
The technology isn't always reliable in the Space Cave, I get it.
Hey, I don't know if that's the case. I'm monitoring it now. I'm looking at the what are they, wavelengths? I'm looking at the feedback on my phone. I don't want to really shit on this app or endorse it just yet, but this has happened before, so I don't know what goes on with it.
It's in beta.
Yeah, it's in beta testing. I saw a thing today. This isn't really that related, but I saw... there's like some movie or something they're promoting about like what your pets do when you're away. And I thought like that would be interesting if you had hidden cameras to come home and watch that footage. But then you're sort of like watching the day that already happened, and that could get really addicting where you spend, you spend 8 hours away from your house and then you spend 8 more hours watching what you missed while you were there. That you could, if you were obsessive, you would just see so much of that. And so I guess that maybe
I mean, the other thing, too, is you're thinking, like, the entire time while the cameras are rolling, like, well, what am I missing?
Yeah.
What would it be better to see live that now I have to go to tape when I get home?
Yeah, I guess if you had, in movies, they can always just drag the cursor over it really quickly, and then they see some movement and go, wait, stop, go back there. And then that way you can scream through like 8 hours of footage really quickly. That would be ideal.
Right.
But...
Especially like, you know, The Secret Life of Pets. What if you literally had like circus pets and you were leaving them home? And, you know, you want to know, what are they up to? What am I missing?
Because the one day that you come home and find your cat or so, you know, one of your pets in a precarious situation, you'd wonder, like, how in the hell did they do that? And if you knew that you could videotape it, that's all it would take. It's just that one instance where you'd be like, well, now I have to see what they do. Do they go, like,
right,
you know, try out my pillows on my bed? And are they walking around on their hind legs? What am I missing?
And also, you can prove that they're liars. If they try to tell you that they were doing something else, no, let's go to tape.
Yeah, you just come home and just like, listen, this is cute that you're pretending to lay there curled up. I'm going to go to this footage. I know you were running around.
It's, you know, I know you're in space, but, you know, it's a big problem here on Earth, pets lying to their owners.
Hey,
so it's getting worse.
I live on Earth, too. I just check out to my cave out in space.
But do you bring pets, or do you just you have cameras?
No, I don't have pets at either place, but if I did, I would get home from space and then immediately go to the footage and watch it.
Right.
This is pretty impressive that we're having word for word the exact same conversation.
It's almost as if it were recorded.
And now we're checking the footage of our previous selves a mere few days ago.
Well, we have a time travel app, and that one actually is working.
Because last time we talked a little bit about, you have a Kickstarter going for your graphic novel, Long Ago and Far Away. I remember.
Yeah.
I remember a lot of our conversation.
Absolutely.
And now
there's 3 days left to pay for the campaign. I'm really excited about this one. It's, you know, I've been into comic books since I was like 8, and I've always wanted to make one, and I hooked up with a great artist called Fernando Pinto, and it's a really cool concept. I always wondered, like, as a kid, I grew up reading comics and fantasy stories and Narnia, Oz, all those things, and it's always about like a kid who goes into this world, saves the world from, like, you know, the evil witch or whatever, then comes back to our world. Well, I always thought, well, what happens to that kid when, you know, he comes back, he's 30, he has a dead-end job, and he's pining for the lost days of his, you know, 12-year-old self when he was like a hero. And now no one cares, no one takes him seriously. And then as a jaded adult, he has to go back into that world again. So would make things better, or would he kind of make things worse because now he's a jaded adult?
Yeah, he's all cynical.
When
you explained it to me last time, I remember having this fork in the road, and last time I talked about how I was a little disenchanted with the new Pee-wee movie, and I think it was only because my expectations were so high. But the other fork was, I always used to think about this, especially with like horror movies, and in The Hills Have Eyes 2, this woman has the most horrific experience, but she's the only survivor in the movie. And if you've seen that movie, you know, like, it's just grotesque what she goes through. And then she leaves this underground dwelling and runs away. And then it's kind of like a sunset. And like, she made it. At least there was one survivor. But I can't help but think about her future and then dating and the conversation she has with people. Like, I had this one bad experience. And how you never get over that. Like, if you have something that terrible happen to you, escaping the situation is not like a relief. It's just perpetual terribleness extended.
So, especially if you're, you know, kidnapped by crazy monsters or cannibals and trapped under a hill. That also definitely makes it worse. And I always thought too, like, how fun would it be? Like, they're going back into this world as they're older, and, you know, no one believes him at home. He's talking to his comic book friends, and they're like, oh god, we've heard this story more times than your therapist, why do you keep telling it? But then he actually drags his friends back into that world with him, so he brings his comic book friends into this world, and he has to save the world again from the Witch Queen. But this time, you know, he's older. He kind of acts a little more inappropriately. He hits on her. I'm like, no, you're supposed to defeat her. There's some great jokes, like if you've read Narnia and all these fantasy stories, I definitely make a lot of jokes there, like, you got to be careful about that guy. You know, he's the giant dwarf. He's very angry. Stay away from him. And they're like, giant dwarf? You're just a guy with a beard.
You're just a regular sized man.
Yeah, you're a regular sized person with a beard. And then the weird thing is like, as you know, as a writer, even no matter how funny you make stuff, writing becomes autobiographical, even if you don't necessarily intend it to. So the story became, too, about, like, as we're kids, you know, we have that childhood sense of wonder. We want to believe in fairy tales. We want to go to Narnia. But then as we become adults, we started to get a little bit more cynical and jaded. And it's also a story of how do you regain that as an adult? How do you get that back, that childhood sense of wonder, because it is a part of you? So it's kind of like a weird kind of inner child redemption story at the same time, too.
Oh, nice. I think there's something really sweet that could come out of that where, because we're all walking around with that. We all remember forts,
right.
And yet we're all panicked about bills and things. And if you did get to go back to a fort world, there would be a part of you that would be kind of cynical, like, this is going to go away so quickly. You soak it up now. So to really buy into it, I think that's really endearing.
And then, you know, after a few minutes, you're like, you know what? I kind of do want to build a fort.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, so that's kind of where it came from. And it was one of those stories, too, that was like, you know, I've been in development here and there, and it just would never let me go. It's that one that just said, no, you have to let us out. You have to let the story out. And it was, I got some great support from other comic book luminaries like Mark Wade. He's endorsing and supporting it. So it's been really, really great, and we're about halfway there, so we're halfway to the goal.
Oh, cool.
So we're every little bit helps, so we're I'm going on about 100 podcasts in the next 2 weeks.
Well, I hope the Space Cave, the Space Burgers, can help out and tip it over a little bit. I'll put a link on spacecave.com, and then if they just go to Kickstarter and search Long Ago and Far Away, that'll take you
there, it'll come right up. And you know, we want to make sure we give people value. Like, it's I always never hey, just help us out, give us money. I want to give people like value for what they're getting. So there's like a free preview. You could actually read the first 10 pages of the story. You get bonus pages, and you can you know, it's only $20 to actually get the digital pages, and then $30 gets shipped to you, all the way up to, for $5,000, the artist and I will actually make your own comic book for you. We wanted to pay it forward, where we're actually, you know, you're helping us out.
You should read it to people while they sit on your lap for $5,000.
You know what? That's not a bad idea. Maybe a bonus tier. Yeah, so we decided, like, okay, well, you're helping us out. You get all the rewards, and then we'll make your own. I'll write it. Fernando will draw it, ink it, letter it, color it, everything, and you'll have your own thing.
Whoa, cool. Well, I'm excited to help out, and I hope it's successful. And glad I could help spread the word a little bit through the cave.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, the cave burgers. I can't imagine them.
Hey,
not
dude,
enduring.
Dude, really, space burgers. Come on now.
I really think the cave spacers will really enjoy
it. How dare you!
That's the guy who does no research before his plug.
Well, I think
I forgot the joke that we did last time.
What's
that's
that?
Right. Like when you were talking about where you were in the space cave and we were talking through Ansible.
Oh yeah, and I didn't know what that was.
Yeah, that was. It went over just as well last time as it is this time. It was from Ender's Game. And,
right. Yeah.
Where it was like when you, any place like throughout all these planets that are really, really far away, you can communicate instantly through Ansible. But if you travel there, then it's like the time space thing where you get all everyone else ages, but you don't. That kind of thing.
I remember this joke now.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah, it was really worth revisiting. Now I'm.
Well, good talking now, with you, man.
We need to use the time machine app now. Let me erase redoing that joke.
It looks like we recorded successfully this time, so...
Excellent.
Yeah, I'll release this out into the world.
Well, thanks a lot, Dave. I really appreciate the help.
You bet. Thanks, Chris. Talk to you soon, man.
Thanks.
Okay.
Bye-bye. See ya.
So check out Chris's Kickstarter if you want to help with a graphic novel. And I'll put the link on Twitter, space_cave, as well at thespacecave.com. And yeah, if you have some extra money laying around, kick it over Chris's way. Help support something creative and artistic. I think it's a cool idea, and I'd like to see it. So let's all chip in. Let's help out through the Space Cave if we can. All right, let's get into it. Returning guests, part 3 coming up. With my guests, they've been on the show before. They are students at UC Irvine, and they are studying. We've talked to them before about cancer biology, and this one's a little bit more about stem cells. I was heading down to, I think, San Diego, or maybe, I don't remember. I was going to be in that area for some reason. They said, hey, let's podcast. And so I said, absolutely. And they had left some beer at my house from when they had been on the show previously. So we shared some Belching Beaver Beaver's Milk Milk Stout. The brewery is Belching Beaver. If you get a chance to try that out, I highly recommend it. It's really good. It was a little chillier when we were drinking it, which is when I typically like those darker beers like that. But you can have it anytime. So try it out if you can. And here is part 3 of my conversation with Heather Wright and Katie Sanders. I think the sound levels are all good.
Yeah.
Seems like it.
Hello.
Yeah.
Hello.
And this is kind of a switch from last time in that I drove down to your neck of the woods this time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I technically brought beer, but half of the beer I brought was stuff.
We're just going to move it back and forth between our place. Yes, well, welcome to Irvine, UC Irvine.
Thanks a lot. This is nice. It's huge. It really sprawls way, way more than I was expecting.
It does.
Yeah.
It's like a big campus.
I saw the sign saying UC Irvine. I was like, oh, cool, I'm there. And then it's like 15 more minutes.
Yeah. Everything's very spread out and manicured. And
But they still are always doing construction on the purpose.
That's true.
And like their roads are already perfect.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I guess I should check and see which. So you're 2. I'm going to turn you up just a bit.
Okay.
Because you're a lower talker than us.
Oh yeah. Sorry.
No problem. That's okay.
Yeah, that was a problem the last time. Katie kept shoving them up in my face.
Just trying to help.
I thought it sounded good last time. No one complained. So I think we're
good.
And I don't know the format this time. The podcast is still relatively new. So I think that doing the first 2 kind of in order, get people to know the guest, makes sense. But then that might release these in no particular order. So
we'll see.
Who knows?
Yeah.
We have no idea what we're planning to talk about, but I have
none.
So many questions, and we should address that we're being monitored by what looks like a miniature sort of monitor lizard, but he's not. He's
a bearded dragon.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's very healthy. You can tell his fat little tail and his belly.
Yeah.
You can't see that from
here. He has those cool eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Like I think several things have tried to use, like gecko sporting equipment. Is that what they do? Like clothing? Gecko stuff?
That sounds right.
I'm reaching. I don't. Isn't there some sort of gecko thing? And then Sobe energy drinks, which I feel like have kind of gone away. I don't hear about, but they were a similar looking kindish. Yeah. Kind of, right? Sort of a lizard.
Yeah, you can't really see it right now, but the beard is their big feature, because when they're mating or if they have like some other male that they're trying to battle with, it turns, he's an orange, a bright orange, but when he gets angry or horny, it turns black and it gets really big.
Either case? That's going to be so confusing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dude, are you into me or are you furious at me? I am having a hard time reading here.
So
that is one. I mean, I think, and not to get too graphic right off the bat, but there is something nice about, like, not something hilarious.
it, given that I'm going, I want to talk about, there's something very direct about erections where, like, if a guy was walking towards you with an erection, you'd be like, this guy is not a threat. Or maybe that guy gets really excited and then he's going to, like, harm you. So
yeah, I don't know if I would feel unthreatened like if a guy was walking towards me with an erection, but.
Yeah.
Well, if you're, like, in a movie theater and you look over maybe, like, a first date and the guy's kind of like, this is a good sign. This guy's not mad at me. Yeah. Okay. Or maybe it'll be a perfect time to tap him on the shoulder. Are you being mad at me?
Unless they're into, like, you know, physical violence.
Yeah.
Then it's a, you gotta stay alert.
Yeah, it depends on what movie you're watching and when that erection shows up.
Yeah.
That is, I drew a comic long ago that was, like, taking place on, like, an alien ship, and it was a human who was tied up, a male, and he was watching, like, the weirdest thing of, like, all these women being sort of, like, milked. But he had an erection, and then the alien was taking, like, a survey, sort of checking off all these boxes as to what erections are, and most of these are just awkward. So I'll have to take that one up and post it for this if I can remember.
Very
that.
Relevant.
Yeah. Well, we were talking about bearded dragons, and you know how that goes.
Well, they actually have, like, a fork penis, and they have little penile glands down their legs.
Really?
Yeah, so the
penile glands.
Yeah, I could take him out and show him to you. Maybe I'll do that later, because there are these, it's really it's kind of gory, I guess, because it's like, it seems like the penis is like an organ that they rip out of their body, because it's kind of bloody when it comes out.
Good.
Yeah. And then it's just
giant black beard.
Yes.
Red penis bloody. They rip out of their body.
Forked penis.
Maybe that's why they're bloody mad. Forked penis. They're mad because they're about to rip this thing out of their body. And then the penile glands, there are these little bumps on their thighs, and they get really big. So I think it might be the equivalent of balls, but they have balls.
Do they have nerves in those glands? Like, does it? Do they,
I think so. I think everything gets very sensitive, so they're just kind of like, and then they walk so low to the ground, everything must be dragging.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I would love to know what the benefit of those weird, sensitive, kind of like balls, glands along the legs would be.
Why?
How did that get in the
I guess
mix?
If they're mating, maybe they rub and it feels good. But why do you need them? I don't know.
What if it's
like an air traffic control? It's kind of like you're getting close if both sides of the penile glands are rubbing on something.
They make little like
landing strip.
Keep coming in the direction you're headed. You're doing great. I hope that is the case. I was thinking it would be like cowboy spurs or something.
Oh, yeah.
Where they can really grip. They can grip on or something.
Yeah. Well, they do bite. Like the female, they bite her little horns that are sticking out on the side.
Uh-huh.
So there is some kind of gripping that happens with their mouth and then their little claws. I have a picture, actually. We were friends on Facebook. One of my profile pictures is Bearded Dragons Meeting, if anybody is interested in that.
Please do. Please connect us up, because I have to see that. And his name is Ron Swanson, right?
Yes.
Comedy. A lot of animal. That's a way nowadays you can tell someone's sensibilities, like, what is their animal name?
Well, isn't he kind of like, he looks a little angry, domineering. He's kind of scary, but also, like, he could have a drinking
problem.
He's
regal.
Right when you said that, I don't know if he did it with the other eye, but his left eye just very slowly blinked and then stayed shut
He's
for a while.
Sending a message.
He's very scary. He's very domineering. Real slow
Leave
blink.
Me alone.
How'd you get into reptiles?
An ex-boyfriend. Yeah.
Just dumped you with some bearded dragon?
Well, he's a breeder, so he breeds bearded dragons, and then one of his clutch, I kept two of them, but if you keep the males past a certain age, then they start fighting a lot.
Oh.
And then, so we split those up. And then actually, Lupe was from him too, because he was breeding crested geckos as well, but then Antonio, his breeder, like the male breeder, died, and so he was really sad about it, so I asked him if he wanted me to take it away from him so he didn't have to look at Lupe and remember the sad memories or something. So I have her, but she's
I haven't
doing
really
well.
Technically even seen Lupe yet, but I'll try
to
get
hides.
A picture of her as
she's
well.
She's hidden among the leaves.
Yeah. What's the name? What's her name?
Lupe.
No, the type, I'm sorry.
Oh, it's a crested gecko.
Crested gecko and a bearded dragon.
Yeah.
And they don't get to hang out with each other?
No, they have totally different habitats. So he is from Australia, and I don't know where she is from originally, but they live in like the Amazon, I think, like kind of like humid rainforest.
Yeah, I'm seeing, because the lights here are for some heat for him, right?
Yeah, and then UV.
Oh, okay. So he needs the sun.
Yeah.
And she's like, I don't care about the sun.
Yeah, nope. But she didn't like it.
She wants rain.
What if you had like a sunning area and an Amazon kind of area? Would they get along, or you think they would fight?
I think she might get eaten.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Really? Could he fit her down?
Ronald.
He'd try.
Why would you?
Yeah, I know. So mean. I used to feed him mice, so.
Whoa.
He can fit some big stuff in there.
Yeah, the jaw looks like, I mean, it's how a child would draw what they think a mouth looks like.
Yeah.
It's kind of like this forever. Long line. That's pretty much it, right? That's a mouth. It looks like it could really double back on itself. Well, I'm sure I said this in the introduction to this conversation, but the voices you're hearing, the bearded dragon owner, once again, Heather Wright, back in conversation, and then Katie... Wait, did I say it backwards? No, I did. Katie Sanders. Okay.
Yes.
For some reason, your names seem like they could interchange, like, or it could be, and I shouldn't say it because then it'll stick, in, like, but it seems like it could be Heather Sanders.
Well, we come as a pair, it seems
like.
Yeah,
we do.
Yeah. Maybe I'll have to split it up next. No, why would we do that?
No.
This is fun.
Yeah.
It's a
yeah.
nice little tripod we have going. Yeah. This trio. A lot happened since last time we spoke. My friend Andy Ritchie, who I mentioned, passed away from brain cancer, and so that
I'm so sorry to hear that.
Yeah. Me too. It was I guess with especially anybody, but particularly a comedian, someone that uses their brain and voice and all of the, everyone that would have brain cancer, you would assume needs their brain.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason there's, I don't know, it's like thinking of a pianist, you know, breaking their hand or losing a hand or something. Like, it just feels a lot more specific to their instrument or whatever. So anyway, like the cancer, and I have a friend who I believe is, I don't want to jinx anything or speak out of turn, but I believe is like gone the other direction and is in the clear now, in remission. Okay. I should check in before I say that, but I didn't say that person's name, so it could be anybody.
Yeah. Well, that's good.
And don't all of us have someone within our circle, however far reaching that is, what layer of the circle it is, where you're like, oh yeah, of course we all have someone that's dealing with cancer on some level. It's
unfortunately.
Crazy.
Unfortunately. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really weird to me. Like, that became more apparent in the last few years of just like, is this how it gets when you get to into your 30s, where just that's what happens? Or it still feels young to me. It still feels like it's a 40s and 50 year olds kind of get the heaviest concentration, but that's not true at all, is it?
Well, the older you get, the more chances your DNA can make a mistake and cause cancer. But I mean, from childhood, teens, 20s, 30s, anyone is susceptible to cancer.
And it seems like there's an average age for every cancer diagnosis, but then it's totally random because people will work out and eat right and then they get cancer at 26 or something,
exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, someone I went to high school with, the most healthy athlete, you know, just if he was a runner, soccer player, just the most healthy person I know. And when he was 25, got pancreatic cancer, and five years later, you know,
that's a pretty
away,
good run though with pancreatic cancer. 5 years.
Yeah, it was, but it's still. I mean, I just can't imagine. Yeah, because that's a very sneaky one where by the time you've noticed it, it's
too late.
Yeah, that got Bill Hicks and Patrick Swayze of late.
Yeah,
and glad to see that remake of Point Break didn't do too well.
Did that come out?
Feels right. Yeah, that's how everyone reacted
so weird.
To it.
Yeah,
did it come out? You're damn right it did. And it didn't do so great.
Yeah,
and I can only feel like somewhere Patrick Swayze doesn't care.
Yeah, because
that's how cool he would be.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Why are you getting so worked up about a movie? Yeah. I said, let it go. No way, Patrick Swayze. You're better than me. I will never let it go. How dare they do that?
Yes.
But that, I mean, he was one of those people when you hear that diagnosis, and he was so positive, and they did it, you know, I think it was 2020 or something like that. Like,
okay.
we're going to his ranch, and he's walking along, and as a former heavy smoker, maybe at the time was still smoking, like, I'm going to beat this. There's no question in my mind. And I'll always remember that. That, like, Patrick Swayze did not in any way, like... And he's on camera, so maybe he's faking it a little bit. But you know.
Well, it's like, what's the point of not having a positive attitude? You can either be like, okay, I'm going to die and just suffer until you die. Or you can have a positive attitude and just decide you're going to fight it and try as much as you can. And think.
Well, how do you... I mean, so not to get too cynical or negative about it, but when you are studying it and you look at the data and sort of the... analytics you can read out and go, this is typically what happens. And so if a doctor says to me, if you got like 3 years, you know, there's a part of you that's like, I'm going to get four, or I'm going to beat this. But isn't there another part of you that kind of goes, well, I don't want to get my hopes up too much. I don't want to live totally in denial. I want to accept the, like, okay,
yeah,
if I beat this, great. I'm going to do everything I can, but I'm not just going to go into it blindly like, I'll show you.
Yeah.
Because that, I would think I would have a much harder time as physically I started to kind of wind down if I'd gone into it with that mindset. Mm-hmm. So it's maybe it's a catch-22. You That's need true. To be yeah. like, full charge, I'm going to beat this, and yet that would be the hardest to deal with. Yeah.
Yeah. I know it's a weird question because I feel like I don't know how I would react if I was diagnosed with cancer.
Yeah, we talked about this a little bit last time, and I kind of, after thinking about it, I was like, well, my first reaction was like, uh-oh, it's all over, I'm done. Because, just because, I think it's because we work with it, we don't think about cancer as a disease in a person, for the most part. Mm-hmm. Our day-to-day lives is thinking about these cells in a dish, what causes them to proliferate, you know, grow more uncontrollably, what causes them to migrate, you know, all these little pieces. I don't think I could do it if I was thinking like, oh, this lung cancer is someone's lung cancer that's killing them. So I think that's why my first reaction would just be like, oh, it's all over, just because all that knowledge that I have all of a sudden connecting to my personal body, I think that would just be really overwhelming.
Yeah.
But I'd like to think that if I did, you know, have cancer, that I'd be positive. And yeah, this is kind of hope for the best, but prepare for the worst.
Well, some of the things that came up or that I thought of after we spoke previously were things like, I forget who I was talking to about this, but every now and again you'll see like an article passed around about the person who discovered cancer also was convinced that like a basic body couldn't host any disease, let alone cancer, like that you can get your pH level up and get, you know, like people drink like alkaline water and things like that. Have you seen anything to substantiate that at all?
So the thing with alkaline water is I think that your stomach just immediately neutralizes it, so it doesn't do anything.
See, when I think of it, I think of like, yeah, but then you keep that alkaline coming down. Yeah. Like you just keep so much. And your body is producing so much acid, gastrointestinal things, just, I don't know how our body's like, more acid, and keep cranking in there. But no matter what you're putting on top of it, your body is in itself not going to be a really high pH all of a sudden, mm-hmm. right? So I don't understand that on like a chemistry level.
Yeah, like that just total body thing, I would think a fever is the only thing you can get systemically that would try to rid something, you know? Mm-hmm. Can you think of anything else?
I don't know.
Yeah.
But that whole thing just seems like another kind of like trend. And I don't know, there might be some scientific evidence saying that drinking alkaline water will give you, you know, 5% less chance of getting this or that. I don't know of any, but there might be some. But it just seems like one of those things. I don't see how alkaline water could prevent your gene from mutating, you know? I mean, so it just seems like another thing. And if that's great, if people think it's helping and they feel more healthy, then that's awesome. And you should totally do that. I feel like that's, you know, it's like sort of like the placebo effect, but just like with anything else, if you feel like it's making you feel better and you feel healthier and stronger, then great, do it. You know, all that stuff helps, I think. It'll release your, it'll reduce your stress. That definitely contributes to all sorts of diseases. So do it, you know, as long as it's... You know, but then there's always the other side. In 10 years, if someone's like, oh, if you drink alkaline water every day, it causes this disease, you know, because there's always the other side. But
all my fingernails fell out.
Oh, that's gonna happen. Yeah.
The idea of being a doctor and saying to someone, this is what we were looking at. It's probably a 2-year run. I would think like there'd be the negative side of me would kind of, all right, that's what medicine's. The positive side of me would kind of go, that doctor's just saying that to motivate me. He really knows I can get past this. But if he said to me, you can beat this, maybe I'd take it easy. So if I get that like 2-year thing, like, I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Like, that's a good thought, it's a challenge that I accept.
Yeah.
That's great.
And especially because doctors can't say that you'll beat it because then you'll see them if you don't, right?
Yeah. But they also just don't know. I mean, it's so complicated.
But that's why if they say stay pessimistic, then I think it's like, I would do the same thing. I like that thought that you're like, okay, so I can beat this.
Yeah,
that's what he's saying subliminally.
We'll see if you're right about that.
Subliminally? Subliminally.
Yeah, I would. I think they would. That's how I would. I guess now that we've circled all the way around, that's how I would do it. Is be kind of negative, but then also take it as like a challenge. Mm-hmm. And I can't, especially with Andy, you know, and you hear, well, and, you know, 0.2% of the time this turns around, so you're like, oh, so it does happen.
Yeah.
That's pretty exciting that it has ever happened. Because when you see it transpiring, you're like, I can't even imagine, I can't fathom how suddenly the body would be genetically producing this thing that's growing that's not good for you. And then all of a sudden the body would go, hey, we got it wrong. Let's stop making that.
Yeah.
And just shrink it back down.
Yeah.
Can you explain that? Do they know how that happens yet?
Again, there's a lot of factors. Tumors are very heterogeneous, meaning that a sample from one part of the tumor will have these mutations causing it to grow uncontrollably, and another part of it will have these mutations and these and these and that. So then you take a drug and it kills some of these cells, and now another type of cell will kind of take over and start growing. So then you treat it with another drug that'll target that. And, you know, so there's always, not always, but there can always be another mutation causing another subgroup of cells to arise. But maybe that drug goes in, maybe there isn't, maybe it's not heterogeneous yet. Maybe there is just that one type, you know, really early on. And so the drug will kill all those and it's gone, you know, and you can get rid of it. But it's just usually there is other mutation. You know, it's messy in a tumor. There's all sorts of stuff going on. So usually once you kill these certain cells, now this other group will start slowly growing. And it's even harder in the brain because we have the blood-brain barrier, which kind of regulates what can pass into and out of the brain.
Yeah, I was just
and a lot of drugs
that,
can't pass that. But now they know, you know, chemists are figuring out ways to allow drugs to get into the brain more and more. So,
but as far as brain tumors go, I think, I don't know if this is true, it's just something I'm thinking, so tell me if I'm wrong, because you know more about it probably. But like other body, like melanoma, other types of cancers, they cause like really big inflammatory responses, so your immune system responds to it. Whereas in your brain, it might cause that same thing, but the only immune cells that can actually cross the blood-brain barrier are macrophages.
Macrophages?
So, there are these cells that eat other cells.
Cool.
Yeah.
Like Ronald.
Yeah.
The Ronald of cells.
For the bearded dragon.
Though. Yeah. So maybe if the tumor in the brain can't cause that inflammatory response, it can't like turn other cells against the body to work for itself, so maybe it has a better chance of like regressing or something. You know what I mean?
I don't. Theoretically, I understand.
It can't trick your immune cells. So.
Well, yeah, because like I think it's kind of a slippery slope. Like once you start tricking the immune cells, then it makes it a lot easier to grow
for cancer cells.
And I don't know anything about
bypass the immune system,
but I don't know very much at all about brain cancer.
Yeah,
so that might be totally wrong.
It seems like one of those riddles or something where like these people mean you harm, these people mean you harm and good. If you let these in, then you could be like, now you have a party where you're just a little unsure, like, oh boy, there's a chance now that it's gonna go radically haywire.
You know what's funny though, talking about pH, is the way macrophages kill things is that they raise their internal pH. After they eat something, they raise the pH up to like 9, and then it lyses, it degrades everything inside of it.
So except there's for something to
engulfs
it.
The cell.
Yeah.
And, yeah. Oh yeah, there's lots of places in the body where pH changes are happening. Mm-hmm.
I guess if you look at like an alkaline flat, there's nothing growing there. So maybe it's an extrapolation of that idea.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I want to make my body just like that flaky white grossness. Nothing will grow there.
Yeah, well, that's a cool experiment. Someone should do that. You know, feed one group of mice alkaline water for a while and another one, and then, I don't know, inoculate it with cancer cells or something, see if it affects that. Like, that's a, you know.
What else could you do? I mean, how else could you make your body more basic? Like, you could stop taking in fruit juices and anything with any like natural acidity that way, and just not introducing new acid into your body. But even then, like you were saying, doesn't your body just have a natural way? Like, if you're born with a 3 or a 6 or I don't know what the human body runs around at, but if you start there,
neutral.
It's new. Yeah, it's just going to be what? And what is neutral?
Like 7.
7. Okay, yeah. So 7. You're
0.4.
Nice. At one point in my life, I knew that.
Now you know it again.
Yeah. Cool. So you can't really change it, like you're saying, like to go up to 9. That seems pretty crazy.
But so no, like yeah, acids are different though, because you can't neutralize an acid with an acid, and we use hydrochloric acid in our stomach to neutralize everything,
right?
Or to break it down to help the process. So when you drink fruit juice or something, if you have like acid reflux or if you have a bladder condition, then the fruit juice is going to affect it. So, but I don't think that the alkaline water will, because it will, once it hits the stomach, it's pH 2 or something, it'll just neutralize, you know.
But if you cranked enough of
just
it,
just like so much of it,
yeah,
you're like just, I think you'd die before it, like,
because if you can't drink a gallon of milk in an hour, you'll barf it up. And
yeah,
milk is really basic,
yeah,
so
yeah.
I don't know.
But you just keep a steady IV milk into your system.
Well, should I go get milk for us?
Yeah, we are drinking a milk stout.
Yeah, we are.
Belching Beaver, Beaver's Milk, the milk stout. This is the one that you guys brought up with you last time, and then I toted it right back down to you. But I kept it in my refrigerator the entire time.
And it tastes great.
It's really good, and it's kind of chilly out, so this is it fits. I like porters and stouts and kind of the darker beers when it's
in the winter.
Yeah, and I mean, we're in Southern California, we have a window open right now. But it
winter
feels
to
nice.
Us.
Yeah, it's like a little, just a chill enough in the air where this beer tastes really good.
Yeah.
And maybe, I don't, is everyone that way? Like, do people in the summer drink this same beer and go, I don't care. Yeah.
Probably. There's probably people that just like beer, whatever, whenever. Yeah. But I do prefer a lighter beer in the summer and a stout in the winter.
Yeah.
Seasonal.
Yeah.
I wonder if that has to do with our internal pH.
Maybe. Or craving.
Yeah. What drives your craving? Oh, well, now we're getting way off the top. You guys are...
Food science, I don't know.
Since I last spoke with you, what has transpired in your research? What have you stumbled upon? Anything new? Any new happenings just in the science community that have caught your attention? Any new life philosophies that have evolved?
Well, I got my first paper published.
Whoa, ooh, hey. Yeah. Damn, I wish I had a sound effect or something.
That's good.
Yeah, well, so it got accepted.
Those were Ronald's leg balls.
Fluttering against the wood.
Leg balls rubbing together. He's very happy for your paper.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not published yet. It's not out in press, but it got accepted. So as long as I don't mess up the publication proofs, then it'll still happen.
Awesome. So, man, and who knows when this has come out or will come out. I guess if people are listening to it, it has come out.
Yeah.
So go search. Yeah. This might be in conjunction
with it.
Unless
the apocalypse happens before it's released.
There's always that factor involved.
There is.
But I tend to bet against it because I have to think, oddly, on the way down here today, I was thinking about those doomsday people that kind of constantly have to tell their children and stuff, like, today could be the day, so just make sure you know the drill.
They make a lot of sense.
It's impressive to see what they make, but not their reasoning for doing it.
Yeah.
Like, when you see them go, well, of course, then the air is going to be filled with all these toxins, so I bought this $50,000 air purifier. You could have done. Yeah, whoa, it's just sitting
there. For that scenario.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. What's the paper going to be? What is its main focus?
So the title is kind of long, and I don't know if I remember it completely, but it's titled, CDCP1 Cleavage is Necessary for Homodimerization-Induced Migration of Triple-Negative Breast Cancer. Nice.
Well, which is a really cool story. Heard cleavage, homo, and breast.
Oh my God. All the important points.
It's about breast cleavage.
Yeah. And how much we love it.
Yeah, no, it's really interesting stuff about this certain protein in breast cancer that is cleaved, just meaning it's cut into two pieces and one
and
piece does one thing.
Itself, and when it binds itself, it induces migration.
You gotta go up a little.
Oh, sorry. No, did no, I not say
induces
that?
Migration, wait. Which means
they move.
Metastasis.
Yeah.
You know.
Okay, so walk me through that a little bit. Migration, I'm a cell, I've been cut in two. Now I'm migrating my way.
No, so the cell's not cut in two. The protein is cut in two.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the cell has the cell membrane, you know, that encapsulates everything within it. And on the membrane, there's all these proteins so that the cell can interact with other cells or other parts of your body, like the stroma, which is just like a matrix that composes you. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not muscle, it's not bone. It's like the cells, stuff in between. Yeah. Yeah, and there's cells in there too. So,
whoa, can I... What does that mean about humans? What do you... You just go, that other part of you that's not really something.
It's kind of the connecting all the cells.
Yeah.
It's like what's in between the cells is like sugars and proteins and...
But it's not like fatty tissue. It's not cartilage. It's not a tendon.
It's just like... It's kind
all
of like
those
a
things
barrier.
You named are made of cells.
Yeah.
So fat cells, you know.
Yeah. But if you just have if you have like a... your breast tissue or something, then there's like a basement membrane is what they call it, and it kind of like keeps all the breast tissue in line, and then outside of the basement membrane there's like another tissue that starts.
Yeah, which, so it's like a sack that contains all the breast cells.
Yeah.
And so in between all the breast cells is protein, just stuff.
Mm-hmm. It's
just proteins, it's sugars.
What are you not getting? Goop. Stuff.
Yeah.
The technical term is stuff.
Yeah.
When they teach you about, you know, there's the epidermis and then the subdermis and skin, you understand that, I guess, on some level. I don't know. There's 7 layers. I don't know all of them. But then going beyond that into... I guess what you just described, like
tissue,
the
other stuff.
Tissue,
like
a tissue, deep tissue wound.
Yeah,
there are these layers, or this is just regarding breasts.
No, it's all your organs. All so it's like your pancreas. You have all of your organs aren't just like a simple planar. I don't know, the same cells everywhere. It's like they're all compartments of functional portions, like a gland or something else. And so that gland, all the cells that are responsible for the function of that gland get encapsulated in basement membrane, and then right butted up against to it is probably another gland. But you have to, like, it's all discrete parts that make up an organ. And then once the organ ends, it kind of encapsulates itself in like another basement membraney type of thing, and then that is what makes it a discrete organ. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Wow.
And maybe setting us up for later, if we do talk about gene expression, all your cells contain the same genetic information, the same DNA in all 37 trillion of your cells in your body. But depending on which genes get expressed, it becomes a lung cell or a pancreas cell or a breast cell. So,
yeah.
And I don't think I'll ever understand that, because I've heard I've heard that thing before. And yet it's like they're coming through a line and there's someone there with a clip going on left, right, you go back to this room.
Yeah. Well, how they know what to become and everything.
Yeah.
It is. I mean, development is really complicated. And
I look at it, I used to like any animal really, but particularly, you know, horses, that you know, like the coarseness of their hair, where it decides to stop, where it changes right around their eye. Mm-hmm. How did they know? Genetically
evolution.
And there's such cool research on, so really a really good animal to study patterning, which is what you're saying, like the patterning of the color of the fur and like where it grows longer and where it grows shorter. It's all patterning, which happens when the horse is a fetus. And so the animal that we use to study that mostly is zebrafish, because super little and they're mostly translucent. And so when we initially found everything out about patterning, it was because zebrafish are striped, given their name. Mm-hmm. So you could turn a gene off and get rid of all the stripes, or
it's like a Photoshop layer.
Yeah,
it's incredible,
so crazy. Yeah, it's awesome.
Wow. So, and what?
Yeah, and it's,
when you watch that happen, you turn that gene off. What's the generational time you have to wait to see them? I mean,
so you can see it when. I mean, I guess right when they come out, they just don't have the stripes.
Would there be like a gestation period?
But it's used because it is such a short development time.
Same reason
that like fruit flies are used for genetics, because you can just mate them and, you know, mutate this gene and then you can just see it right away.
Yeah.
You guys might have been the ones that told me this, or I read it in Salt, Sugar, Fat about fruit flies having similar taste buds to us. They like vinegar and wine and butter and olive oil and things that
are so refined.
Yeah, they're very, very decadent. Well, going back to the structure, I guess, of the layering and how I mean, it's too much. I can't.
Yeah.
How would you? Have we ever complete an organ transplant?
Yeah.
How on earth do they align those things? I think most of us, me included, think that you just take it out. And you go, yeah, that's a heart. There are like four parts that connect to this other one. And I'll just sew those up somehow.
Yeah, and your little mechanic character just slaps it in there. And it works.
Just crushes the hood down. Try it now. I don't see how it I don't understand it, but is there something, because like, you know, our cell, our tissue, and this kind of, I feel like it has this weird mind of its own where it kind of senses its similar cells out. Yeah. And goes, you get over here, let's link arms.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then suddenly there's a blood vessel that's connected, so, you know, is that kind of how it works?
I think so, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't know about organ transplant in particular, but yeah, if you sew a, you know, artery together, they kind of know what structure they're supposed to be in and will just grow together and heal.
Yeah,
I think
so. Getting into did you say the complex, what was it when you said that we're like all 37 trillion cells have the same DNA?
Same genetic DNA code. Yes. Yeah,
okay, so
the same DNA, the same chromosomes, you know.
So when we have a new organ in our body, like you give me a kidney, let's say,
uh-huh,
what happens to your kidney in my body on a cellular level, like within say 7 years or something like that?
Well, is it's it not still? Like the DNA changes, the organ stays, it still has the DNA of the donor, and then you still retain like your recipient DNA. It's just that, so they can get along just fine. Human cells can get along with human cells. The only thing that is detrimental to an organ transplant is the blood, because of the antigens that they present on their cells. So that's why you have like A, B, O.
Yeah.
So that's the
immune system
thing.
Will attack different types,
yeah,
of,
but it's
blood.
It's only the blood.
And you could never trick the body.
Mm-mm.
Never drain a kidney of all the blood, put in different blood, then inject or insert that into a body.
Maybe.
It doesn't seem like it.
I don't know.
Right?
I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't know. I don't want to keep like this trying to.
I think
you guys are the closest thing I know to an organ transplant expert.
Yeah, I know.
Gotta study
we'll
up.
We'll play the part. Just kidding. Until we get yelled at.
I know. Someone else call in. I don't know.
No, but I think, okay, so you could probably perfuse the organ with like saline or something and then put it in. But I think maybe the problem with that would be that the time that it would take to do all that, and then by the time you get it into the donor, them having to reperfuse it with their own blood would take a long time.
Okay.
So it might die. Parts of it might die. But that could be bullshit.
Well, yeah, thing, and I then know. I was like, with the kidney, your kidney in my body 40 years later, I mean, with our cells all degenerating and being replenished, it would my cellular, it, like, so what my DNA,
whose cells would it be?
Yeah, whose cells would be in my body?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know what the turnover of kidney cells are. So okay, it would just depend on the type of cell, if they would, how much they would regenerate, or.
Because a liver, I mean, that's quick. Like, you would think in a few years.
Yeah, well, a kidney is pretty quick, too, because it is the organ that, you know, cleans up your blood and your urine and everything. So. Mm-hmm. Has a pretty important responsibility. But when it does regenerate itself, it's still regenerating itself with donor cells, because that organ contains stem cells itself, you
right.
know.
Oh, right, right, right.
Yeah,
okay.
So it's not like you as a recipient have to like shove little stem cells in there to keep making it. But
and so on a cellular level, do you guys understand that, like stem cells in particular within, I don't know what I think of or what other people think of in stem cells. I think you just think of like, well, there was like a placenta and somehow like there's these little stem cells hanging out there as a part. You had to get a certain, I don't know, bit of fiber or tissue, and then they're loaded with stem cells. But each organ itself has stem cells to kind of...
Yeah, there's the initial like embryonic stem cell, which is what you're made of. It's the one that says like it makes daughter cells that can become any organ. It tells, they line up so that you get your mouth and your anus, you know, like everything happens from them, but then...
Got a mouth, got an anus, move along.
Good to go.
But the rest is just extras. All right, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, but then once you make all the different organ stem cells, they still have stem-like properties, then those are less, they're not like totipotent. They can't make every cell in the body. They can only make their cells, which is liver cell, pancreas cell, lung cell. But Katie actually is like an expert at this stuff because she does expert, stem cells.
Yeah, stem cell is basically just a cell that can become other types of cells. So it renews itself and it makes a cell that will, it's called differentiate into a liver cell, a terminal differentiated liver cell or whatever. Yeah, so each organ or different organs, or like say in your blood, you have blood stem cells that can make different types of blood cells and replenish itself. Yeah, that's what a stem cell is. And
yeah, but
there's a lot
so why the fervor? Why the, you know, the
anger about it?
There's excitement on think about what we could do.
Yeah, it's a breakthrough in science. So all these, a lot of diseases are degenerative or, you know, harm your body. So diabetes is when, you know, or one of the types of diabetes is when your cells die. Islet cells die, can't produce insulin. So, or Alzheimer's is when, you know, your brain cells build up the certain type of plaque and die. So all these diseases that cause certain cells to die, if now we have a source of cells that can become anything, that's really exciting. But like anything else, it's super complicated. You can't just inject stem cells into your brain and your Alzheimer's will go away.
Yeah.
But there's so much cool research in many different fields. A lot of eye diseases, brain and neurological disorders, a lot of different diseases where they...
Like burn victims too,
or
right?
will be applicable. Yeah.
Is that right? So that would... It seems like there has to reach this tipping point where... there's too high of a demand for people to ignore it any longer, or maybe slide past some of the ethical concerns.
Yeah, which, that's what I was saying.
That's
anger.
The problem with this.
Oh, definitely.
Cells.
Yeah, yeah. That I mean, that fervor thing is on both sides, like excitement, this new frontier, and then this other side that's very angry.
But the angry people, I think they're mostly angry about the research that we do on embryonic stem cells, which is because we have to get them from aborted fetuses and things like that. But as far like now after Yamanaka, we have the induced pluripotent stem cell, so you can take a fibroblast from your skin cell, and you can put it in a plate and you can turn it back into a stem cell.
What?
So you don't even need
genes
a fetus
in there.
Can I do this in my own home?
Revert. You probably could
if you get it clean enough.
If you want to buy all the ingredients.
They'll cut off a little bit of
go
your
go to the grocery store. Yeah.
Buy some
cut some skin
crank it in the microwave.
Opt for mix
spin it really fast.
Yes. And then you've got yourself a stem cell.
Yeah,
you said tissue blast? What is that?
Tissue blast?
Is that what you said?
No. A fibroblast.
Fibroblast.
Yeah. Fibroblast is a type of cell.
It's a type of cell. It's all over your... So it's in the goop. Well, the stuff. Fibroblasts are all over the stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
If you could walk me through a little bit, the... Not harvesting, but like, wasn't it... Carly Fiorina that was like, the babies are wriggling around on the table.
And yeah. And people are,
And that's ridiculous.
No. So embryonic stem cells come from when an egg is fertilized by a sperm. So there's millions of these in banks where people do in vitro fertilization, and then they're going to have them implanted. Now there's five extra that people don't want kids anymore. So it's sitting in this bank. Okay, so do you want to... I mean, I understand the ethical reasons why if people believe that life begins... It's all about if you believe life begins at when a sperm enters an egg...
I would say like that 5 years old.
That's true, because you don't form memories till like four.
Yeah, so, I see my friend's kids and like, you're not going to remember any of this.
Yeah.
Wish we had you in my ethics class. That would have been great. But anyways, people are upset because, they think that's a baby that you're killing, but it's just a sperm and an egg fused, you know, together. Yeah. So for me, personally, I don't think of that as a life. And I think if that's going to be thrown away or used to study a disease that could potentially lead to... a cure for something.
Yeah.
That's what I want to do. But I still understand that if you think that that is a life, why you wouldn't want to do that. And so there's a lot of ethical issues with that.
Imagine cemeteries if everyone unanimously agreed that was a life.
Oh my gosh.
That had ended. It's just, whew. Anyway, moving on.
Yeah.
That is.
I just don't understand if it's going to be thrown away or used. I don't understand
that.
Well,
that's like, okay, have you guys seen The Physician?
No. Is it a movie?
Yeah.
No.
It's based in like 1100 AD. So when medicine was like first, I don't know, when they were getting the grips on how to actually cure diseases with surgery and stuff, I guess. But that was the thing was, I mean, I don't know how realistic it is, but they weren't allowed to cut into bodies after they had died postmortem, so they couldn't learn like what everything actually looked like. Mm-hmm. And then so they would just like heal with herbs and stuff, and then they finally, like, everybody was dying of this like side sickness, not everybody, but it was like a your
kind of an epidemic
plague. Yeah, but what is it called? Your appendix. It was just people's appendix were bursting. So then somebody like cut open a body and they found this appendix, and like that's the cause of it. And then he got in trouble because religious people were like, you can't do that when he's dead. And he's like, but the body's gonna get thrown away.
Da Vinci took a bunch of crap about that.
Science versus, I mean, there's always
maybe
that.
Over time, maybe like 100 or 200 years, will be, nobody will care.
Well, I always rail on that, and sorry to step in there, but in stand-up, I have a hard time with that when really religious people go, well, thankfully there was a cure. Like, that science provided that.
Exactly.
And bypassed a lot of the things that you would have adamantly opposed, but when it benefits you directly, then it's okay.
Yeah.
And that's tough. Like
animal researchers and people that protest that, and you just want to walk up to them and be like, have you ever taken Advil? Has anyone you love or know ever taken any drug? Because that's, you know, I don't know. I mean, I struggle with that too. I don't personally do animal research, but it's like, I understand the use. I'd rather have people experimenting on mice than humans. And I don't know if like ethically that's, you know, right or wrong, but I accept that scientific research to benefit from it.
Mm-hmm. Well, the philosophical kind of necessities involved in that are so interesting on a number of levels. And I'd like to get into that if we could in our next one. How about we take a little break?
Okay.
And then we'll attack that head on.
Because
I think that's ripe for the three of us. We're just the ones to take it on.
We are.
Okay.
All right, so I will put that comic on the site, and I'll put some pictures of Ronald and Lupe as well. And the cookies were delicious. Heather made cookies, and they were so good. I ate them mostly on the way home, and when I got back, they're just the nicest. And part four coming up next week, we'll get even more into the philosophical side of and ethics and things like that with stem cell and what it means to humanity and medicine in general. And I like talking with them, so stick around for that. We have a different type of milk stout on that episode. It looks like I'm going to be at the Bridgetown Festival in Portland, Oregon, June 1st through the 3rd. So if you're in that area, come out and say hello. If you're an expert and you'd like to be on the show, you can reach out either through davidhuntsberger.com or thespacecave.com through the contact page. I'd love to have you on. Love to chat and have some beer. If you know a good beer, if you know some good music, send it my way. I want to share all that stuff as much. Again, just in the median, in the middle of the street. The cave is crowded today. We'll just keep it nice and quiet in our minds. All right. Thanks to everyone who's subscribed and rated or commented or anything like that on iTunes. You can get a bunch of my stand-up material on iTunes or Amazon or wherever else. There's new audio on Pandora. You can start a David Huntsberger channel. So anyway, if you want to do that, go for it. And thanks to Dan for putting the show together. Thanks to Rob for the theme song. And as you know, I was in Boise recently as part of the Tree Fort Festival. I saw a lot of music and saw a lot of Boise. Walked around, saw the river, saw the Black History Museum, which in Boise is pretty small and not all that well attended. But it was there. Boise just in general is fantastic. I love it there. The weather's good. The people are nice. The scenery is pretty. And the music at the festival was really great. It was a lot of independent bands, which I am in full support of. It wasn't quite as scene-stery as South by Southwest or something like that. It genuinely seemed like they were trying to support bands that you might not know of. And this is one you may know of. They're starting to gain a little attention, but I've heard them on the radio a little bit. And then seeing them live, I thought they were great. So here's a song of theirs. I saw them perform live at the festival. It's off their new album called Plaza. This is Quilt, and the song is Roller. Thanks for stopping by the Space Cave.